98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show
really
that's ever existed.
It really, really
in
is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world.
I'll just get it out of the way early.
What is up? A tremendous Friday to you.
It is the Bickley and Murata Show with a much different look, a much different composition today. Two-thirds of the crew that starts the show have opted to be near beaches as opposed to in Phoenix, Arizona on June 11th. So, of course, we got young Jesse Morrison behind the glass.
What's up? Great to have you, Jesse.
Solid jungle guy.
And another solid Bickley and Murata guy, John Bloom. Bloomer, what is up?
Oh, so good to be here, clones. Listen, I'm jacked up, Vince. Game three's tonight. And I feel like, you know, I could probably talk about it for, I don't know, the next 7-9 hours in a row leading up to it. Is that about
You got four here and then like more pregame coverage starting at 6.
Let's go,
and then
man.
Postgame coverage.
Yes.
Yeah.
All of it. And I the more Jim Rome, the better from you. I'm happy to listen to you go that route because, you know, I started my career as an update guy during Rome's show in Detroit. And I know you and I share
too.
That.
Yes.
So we go way back to listening to this dude.
Yeah.
And you have absolutely nailed that impression. And I felt that way for you.
The other show in the block that I had to run the board for during that time in my
career.
Fabulous Sports Babe.
Same.
I have not worked on.
You don't have that one.
I have not worked on that impression.
I can't even remember what she called her callers, too. It was very polite. She was, she wasn't cutting people off the same way Rome does.
No.
Yeah, but she had her own thing.
You know what I loved about that show? Going down
she
radio memory
guests.
Lane. Great guests and it had the best production, funny production
yes.
that was always like kept fresh. It was that was good.
Were you behind that? It wasn't Jared Carlin because he was an embryo back then.
No,
so Jesse Morrison wasn't even a thought in his parents' mind.
No, I just like the stuff they did originating from that show was pretty good.
Yes, you know the days, the glory days of radio, the golden age of sports radio, I think is what spawned you and I into the. You know, we kind of got in at the similar time. And back in that day, people listening right now, this kind of all is tied in with Planet Orange and this being a Suns town. So just bear with me for a second. But, you know, when I went over all the way across the country to go study this craft at Syracuse in New York, I heard all about the fan, right? And I know you know all about the fan in New York because you guys talk about it still to this day with my friends at the company.
Great moments in New York sports radio.
Exactly. Thank you. I was trying to remember how you phrase it. And so they're still going, but they were like the gold standard and for a while the only ones really doing around-the-clock sports talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, cities around the country, it just started percolating. But in the beginning, it was these national shows that we would all sit in on and basically do our local updates during the national shows. And here we are. Now you guys have what I think is the best show in this market. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well,
I'm going to try
you.
To do my best to be as critical of the Phoenix Suns as possible over the course of the next 3.5 to 4 hours.
You be you, Boomer.
No, I'm just kidding. I can't do that.
All right. Well, let's get this thing started, Jesse.
Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Yeah, the series has shifted, at least geographically. Now the Phoenix Suns are charged with the task of not allowing it to shift competitively as they visit the Denver Nuggets in Game 3 of their Western Conference semifinal series at Ball Arena tonight. Suns, of course, up 2 games to none after Wednesday night's 123-98 shellacking of the Nuggets. After which, Denver head coach Michael Malone offered 18 different ways to illustrate his team's ineptitude, including the phrase, "I felt we quit." Michael Porter Jr., the Denver forward, who was clearly not close to 100% in Game 1 with a back issue, he's listed as probable for the Nuggets tonight. That game gets underway at 7. Pre-game coverage starts here at 6 o'clock with John Bloom and Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Very curious. We'll get into this a lot today, obvious, but I'm very curious to see what kind of response is mounted by the Denver Nuggets tonight.
I am too. You know, they're clearly going to have some things to get excited about. Mm-hmm. We know about the MVP trophy and ceremony that should be taking place to award Nikola Jokic that honor. But, you know, I also checked into this, and just to keep everybody's minds at ease, I know we've discussed this. For those who don't know, Ball Arena, it's named after the company that makes the mason jars, you know, the glass.
Yeah.
They are not handing those out. That would be a horrible idea to hand out mason jars to everybody who comes into a game when they've seen their team get their butt whooped back-to-back games and potentially could be setting up for another one of the. It's not going to happen. I know if you watch soccer, you see them throwing the ball. No, we heard Kyrie got hit. You know, all this. No mason jars will be handed out.
Good decision by the marketing people for the Nuggets. Last night of the NBA playoffs, the Milwaukee Bucks, who looked every bit as lifeless as the Nuggets have against the Suns, showed some fight. They beat the Brooklyn Nets 86-83 in Game 3 of their Eastern Conference Series. Jrue Holiday hit the go-ahead layup for the Bucks with 11 seconds left, and then Bruce Brown missed a driving shot in the closing second to feel Brooklyn's fate, because on a team with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you absolutely positively want Bruce Brown taking that shot.
That's the guy.
Yep. Giannis and Chris Middleton combined to score 68 points, which was 79% of Milwaukee's total, which is the highest percentage of any duo in any game in NBA playoff history. That series still 2-1. Utah Jazz looking strong. They took a 2-0 lead over the LA Clippers in the other Western Conference semifinal, 117-111 in SLC last night. Donovan Mitchell, 37 for the Jazz. Jordan Clarkson at 24. Rudy Gobert cleared 20 rebounds. Second straight series, the Clippers have trailed 2-0. Game 3 of that series tomorrow night back in L.A.
And the Clips were right there. They went on a run late in that game with just a few minutes left. I was impressed by the Jazz countering that run of Kawhi and company, because it did seem like momentum was flipping and the Jazz had control. And then the Clippers just grabbed it for moments, and the Jazz quickly closed the door, ended up pulling away at the end. So they've had an impressive start, like the Suns have.
Yes, they have. Jazz are a strong basketball team. One other game on the schedule tonight, Game 3 between Philadelphia and the Hawks in Atlanta. That series knotted up at 1-1. Tip-off from State Farm Arena is at 4:30 Arizona time, preceding Suns-Nuggets. D-backs are home after another disastrous road trip, which extended their losing streak to 19 straight away from Chase Field. And they've got a new look on the coaching staff. Hitting coach Darnell Coles, assistant hitting coach Eric Hinsky were shown the door amid the team's struggles, while former Reno Aces hitting coach Rick Short takes over with help from Drew Headman, who had been the D-backs run production coordinator. I love these newfangled titles in sports coaching.
The RPC.
The run production coordinator. The D-backs, by the way, ranked 22nd in the majors in batting average, 17th in runs scored. And with the new approach, they get to face Shohei Ohtani in the first game tonight.
Ooh,
with Merrill Kelly going for the D-backs. 6:40 first pitch, 6 o'clock pregame on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. ASU's got its new baseball coach, Willie Bloomquist, leaving the front office of the D-backs after 6 years as a special assistant to Derek Hall. He becomes the new head coach, replacing Tracy Smith. Of course, Bloomquist wore the uniform at ASU from 97 to 99 and spent 14 years in the big leagues. It's an out-of-the-box hire, but I think that's viewed differently than it would have been even 4 or 5 years ago after ASU has had success with the Herm Edwards hire.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this is a program that has a lot of success in the past and high expectations, right, to compete every year in the Pac-12. So Willie Bloomquist isn't walking into a situation where he's going to be able to ease in and take his time. There's going to be expectations right from the jump.
Yes. Mercury on their home floor tonight. They host Dallas at Phoenix Suns Arena. Those two teams met on Tuesday night. Dallas won by 4. They'll tip it up at 7. Phoenix Rising FC on their home pitch at Wild Horse Pass tomorrow night, hosting Tacoma Defiance, which actually I think would be a great name for a grunge band if this was 1992.
And appropriately placed in the country.
Yes.
That's,
that match gets underway tomorrow at 7:30. And the Arizona Rattlers will play their first home game since 2019 tomorrow night when they host the Tucson Sugar Skulls, which would be a terrible name for a grunge band. That's in downtown Phoenix tomorrow. 6:05 is the kickoff.
It's more
there.
Punk. Sugar Skulls?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a bit punky.
I think hair Ska. Band with that one.
There you go. There's your splash for Friday. June 11th, Suns Nuggets Game 3. We'll set the scene for you next. It's Bickley and Murata with John Bloom in today, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter, the home of Phoenix Suns playoff basketball, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. The Suns have a 2-0 series lead.
Suns win.
Bickley and Murata talk Suns Nuggets now.
Honestly, we're just talking to each other. Game 3 will be the hardest game of the series. We feel like, especially the most important game. These guys are going to play with a lot of energy. I'm sure Joker will get his MVP trophy in front of that crowd, so their crowd will be behind him. We just got to come in and lead on each other like we've been doing all year, have a good set our game plan and attack these guys no other way than we've been doing all year. So we're looking forward to it. We're going to enjoy this win tonight, but we're going to flip our switch early in the morning to game 3 and get prepared for this this battle in Denver. But it's the most important game of the season.
It's Jay Crowder, the Suns, following game 2, which was an absolute blowout. In fact, I had a little time, Bloomer, and John Bloom's in for Bick today. The Suns won every quarter of that game on Wednesday night. And that's only the third time that's happened with them this year. A team that won 51 games, and that was, what, their sixth playoff win. So only three times in 57 games did they win every quarter. That's how dominant they were on Wednesday night.
That's surprising. I would have guessed it happened more. I know they've had several wire-to-wire wins.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you win every quarter. So
yes,
it's a different stat. And yet I love the effort out of you to go get that. That is that's something.
Effort / boredom.
Yeah, okay, combination. Yeah, but it depends on how you want to spin it.
Some great things are born from that combination.
Yes.
Effort and boredom.
Meanwhile, nothing really boring about the way the Suns are going about their business. And you mentioned dominating that game, too. And it makes me think about what tonight is going to look like for game 3, because obviously the scene is different. And while I get to the scene changing to Denver in the Mile High City, where I did call a game back in January, it's definitely an advantage for them. They have a good crowd. The Nuggets have always had a good fan base. But I want to just take a second to, A, thank you for bringing it the way you've brought it, because I know your normal partner, Dan Bickley, does occasionally bring it up that you are the public address announcer of Phoenix Suns Arena. And as a former PA announcer myself, you know I have a ton of respect for the craft that you're doing. Little
different, one way to put it.
Yeah, it's a little different in NFL than NBA, because you definitely have to be more of a cheerleader in the NBA. When I was doing Cardinals public address, and for those who don't remember, I did the last 2 years at Sun Devil and then the first 7 at the new place, which was then what was Cardinals Stadium. Then it flipped to University of Phoenix. And now State Farm, right?
Yep.
That was restricted. Like we were told what we could and couldn't say, could and couldn't inflect even.
And they've loosened it up in recent years, but still it's not as loose as the NBA.
Now, the NBA, it's kind of no holds barred, right?
Yeah.
But I love what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
And I love what the crowd is doing. And I do always like to mention that, obviously, when I'm taking phone calls after games. But since I'm in a different audience now, let me throw it out there. Planet Orange, just pat yourself on the back for a second. Because the rest of the world's talking about you, too. Not just your basketball team, talking about you. And that's awesome, because I feel like, Vinny, we're part of that. Like, we are. And it's really, really a prideful thing to be part of this fan base. And you've been part of it very long time growing up here for your life. And for me, it's been 30-plus years of being a fan, but a lot of it was spent not around others. So much more fun to be surrounded by the other Suns fans.
Let me just play this real quick. This was Kyler Murray yesterday at his press availability out of Cardinals minicamp.
Courtside season ticket holder Kyler Murray, that guy?
Yeah, okay. He was there. He was there game 2 on Wednesday night. And he's noticed the Suns crowd.
How can you not? I think the first game I went to during the playoffs, that was my first game back, seeing the crowd, seeing everybody, out here, just loving it. I mean, you could just feel the energy. It was, you know, can't really explain it. You know, you had to be there. It was pretty crazy. So for us, man, I think home field advantage will definitely be a thing. I think the fans are excited. You know, obviously, past 2 years or before prior to last year, you know, we weren't very good. So I think the fans are ready to, you know, see the new and improved team. You know, last year you started off hot. And I think their fans would have been live last year, but they weren't here. So they've had a year without football, and I think they're ready to go. So I can't wait. I know the guys can't wait. Watching the Suns play, man, they're doing great. So I think it's, you know, it's time for us to, you know, piggyback off what they got going.
Yeah, so there are people noticing. There are people talking. I echo your sentiments. The crowds have been unbelievable, really, since they've been let back in, but mm-hmm. more so in the playoffs with the increased capacity. That being said, the Suns are going to face it now, really, to a large degree for the first time in this postseason. The Lakers crowds apparently were pretty loud, but they were still limited in terms of capacity and what they could allow. Ball Arena is going to be rocking tonight. You mentioned it. Jokic is getting his MVP award. They need something to act as like the lighting of a fuse for this series for the Nuggets. They'll try to feed off that emotion. I think in a lot of ways, and we'll get into this today too, the Nuggets are a desperate basketball team, and their fan base can help kind of push that desperation forward tonight. This, I think Jay Crowder is right on the money. This is going to be the hardest game of the series for the Suns.
I think so, too. And it's going to be probably the hardest first 12 minutes, probably the hardest first quarter, because you got to believe that the Nuggets have to send a message early after the way Michael Malone undressed them as a team and as a group, and looking at their head coach in the eyes. They can't possibly go out there with less than max effort mm-hmm. to start this one out. So I'm with you. I think it's going to be a different vibe. I think, you know, some people say, well, how are the Nuggets fans going to be feeling after they just took it on the chin for two games in Phoenix? But, you know, the Nuggets fans didn't lose those games. That was their yeah. team that lost the game. The Nuggets fans are ready right now. They want to go out and cheer their team. They didn't get to cheer their team on to that Western Conference Finals run in the mm-hmm. bubble. So, yeah, they want to take advantage and be a part of this, but the Suns can take them out of it if they continue to play with the, power and the will that they played with so far in this series.
Yeah, here's another one from Jay Crowder from Wednesday night talking about the Suns and how important it is to impose their will.
Yeah, that's just how we try to play. We're trying to impose our will early. It's a great team over there. We don't want them to get comfortable, especially offensively. Once they get comfortable offensively, it's tough to stop them. So we just want to try to make them feel us early and try to make it last for 48 minutes, the entirety of the game. So we respect those guys, and I think they're getting our best effort on that end of the court. Their offense is very high powered. They got the MVP on their team, and we're aware of that, and we know everything runs through him. So We're just trying to make it as difficult as possible, not only for him, but for others too, for Porter Jr., for Gordon. We're just trying to make it as difficult as possible for those guys because they can't score the ball. So it's a team collective effort. We're doing a good job of honing in on what we need to hone in on and trying to figure out the rest of the stuff on the fly and play hard. But there's definitely a sense of urgency on our behalf because of their offensive potency that they have over there. So kudos to those guys for us being so locked in on them that we respect them because we respect their offense and their style of play.
There's a lot of truth in what he says there. I thought Michael Porter Jr. helped the Suns set the tone in game two. The Suns, to their credit, have really, really bought into this team defense philosophy. It's been evident. Their defensive numbers in the playoffs have been great. So the effort was there, obviously, early. The Nuggets didn't come out very sharp, and Michael Porter Jr., instead of letting the game come to him, tried to take the game over early on, and what was he, one for his first nine?
Yeah.
That kind of set the tone for what happened to the Denver Nuggets in game two, in my opinion.
It did, and look, you're asking a lot of a guy who, I get it, has the pedigree and has a lot of the skill set that could potentially bloom into the type of scorer that the Nuggets are hoping Michael Porter Jr. Mm-hmm. can be. I just don't think he's ready for it yet. And he's not 100% healthy, which isn't helping his cause.
Yeah.
But then again, has he ever been 100% healthy? Remember, that's why a lot of people passed on him in the draft mm-hmm. because of what went down in his 1 year at Missouri. He's immensely talented, but there's still some question marks when it comes to him. And this is why you know, we talk about it so much that when you are a young team, and that means like you could be super talented, but still your talent is 22 and 23. Boy, is your work cut out for you to get it done at this level in the playoffs because of things like what Jay Crowder just laid out and the experience that guys like Jay Crowder and Chris Paul have, and they're going up against you and they know how to shut you down.
Yeah. Coming up next, we zoom out from this series and ask the big picture question. How legit do the Suns feel right now as a title contender? We're not jinxing anything.
Nah.
It'll be a nuanced discussion next with John Blumen for Dan Bickley today here on Bickley and Marotta. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter, the home of Phoenix Suns playoff basketball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. The Suns have a 2-0 series lead.
Suns win.
Bickley and Marotta talk Suns Nuggets now.
They have great leadership, starting with Chris Paul and Jay Crowder, but also Monty Williams, okay? He's a great leader. He has these guys being stars in their role. And then if you want to take it a notch further, look at their front office. Who is their general manager? James Jones, okay? James Jones, we call him champ in the NBA, raised in the Pat Riley culture, won championships with the Heat. Ray won a championship with the Cavs, went to multiple finals. He has the recipe as well. So I'm looking at this team. They play inspiring, winning basketball, agenda-free basketball on the offensive end. Defensively, they're tied on the string. They do a great job of playing boxes and elbows. They help the helper, and I believe that they're going to win this series as well and close this thing out.
That's Kendrick Perkins from ESPN sharing his thoughts, big picture on the Phoenix Suns. He's a guy that's been pretty bullish on the Suns all season long. But saying, you know, looking at some of the ingredients that are necessary for a team to win a title. And I go all the way back to the offseason when the very idea, the rumors, and they weren't rumors for very long until it became, you know, a reality that the Suns bloomer were able to go out and get Chris Paul. And I remember the debates that were going on among Suns fans. Oh, they brought in a 36-year-old point guard.
$40 million.
Ricky Rubio's fine. Kelly Oubre is kind of the fuel of the team.
But $40 million.
$40 million. There were people against it.
Yes.
And we asked the question at the time, okay, what does this mean for the Suns? We were all convinced they were a playoff team. I remember people, they're 4 or 5 seed in the West. Well, they were the 2 seed, 1 game out of the 1 seed. And this has been, you know, filled with peaks and valleys to get to where we are right now. And I shared this with Bick the other day. During the regular season, the tail end of the regular season, looking at the playoffs, I was just really kind of hoping the Suns were around for as long as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't necessarily see a path to a championship for this team. I see a path to a championship for this team. And a lot of it has to do with what a lot of people have been hoping for in the NBA for a long time, and that is widespread parity. This thing is wide open. Of the 8 teams that are playing basketball right now, I think you can make a real strong case for about 6 winning the title. And the Suns are in that group of 6.
Yeah.
You agree?
I would. I'd say they're probably third. I think if you look at Vegas, that's the way the odds look right now, because I just took a look during the last break. It's legal for us to talk about this stuff now, isn't it? So,
sure.
Yeah, they like Brooklyn, and I know that's not surprising. Brooklyn's the favorite right now, the remaining teams. Utah's next. And then Phoenix. So right now they've got the Suns as the third best chance to win it all. Now that is dumbfounding if you really want to zoom out for a second, Planet Orange, and think about what that means. But I agree with you, Vince, that now's the time to allow your brain to go there. Because if you don't do it now, when the heck are you going to do it? You know, when has there been a better chance for this basketball team? Now, we're not trying to curse them.
No.
We're not trying to, like, put some bad juju out there or anything like that.
Make no mistake, we're not even going as far as to say that this series against Denver is over.
No.
It is not.
No.
Again, zooming out and looking big picture. And something that you have been advocating for Suns fans for a long time is enjoy every minute of it. Part of the enjoyment is you know, is it a guilty pleasure? Yes. But looking ahead is part of the enjoyment.
Yeah. It is. And riding this wave and understanding there's highs and lows to it, understanding there's moments where you feel like it's all coming to an end. Like, all it would take is Chris Paul grabbing onto that neck again, and you're going to think, oh, there we go. And that we've already had those thoughts. But it's more than that. It's because of the way this team is going about its business. It's because of all of the different elements that have been put together in this basketball team. You know, it's funny. Sometimes you see it happen over the course of years. I remember covering the Detroit Pistons before I moved here in 2003, and you could see kind of elements coming together of that basketball team where they could potentially go on a run, but there were other teams that were so much more expected to win championships than the Pistons were in 2004. Of course, they won right after I moved here with that team that really stands the test of time as a true team when it comes to like all of the winners of the Larry O'Brien Trophy over the course of the last two, three decades, right?
Yeah.
The Detroit Pistons of 04, it really stands out.
Those Spurs, teams and a couple of the Spurs teams.
Yeah, I pull them in there, but I never like giving them love, Vince. You know that.
Yeah.
Not that team.
Yeah, forget I said that.
Thank you. So I think about that, and I think about kind of how that team came together. And now, looking back at it, you're seeing Ben Wallace go to the Hall of Fame. Probably a lot of people were surprised that Ben Wallace is going to go to the Hall of Fame. But, you know, Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton, those were the big stars there. This team, obviously, it was sped up a little bit, but the circumstances are completely different. We lived through a pandemic. We're still living through a pandemic. It changed everything. It stopped the season in its tracks. And then it started back up in a situation where it didn't even seem like we were going to be part of it. I remember talking to you about this. And we were like, I don't know. Do you think the Suns are going to play in the bubble? Is this going to, you know, how many teams are they going to have? And this was like a month or two of this, of wondering. And then we get the word, all right, they're going. And we also get the word that even though they're going, the chances of them making the playoffs, not very good. You could win all eight games and still come home.
Yes.
And that's what happened.
That's exactly what happened. And I remember the reaction nationally. You know, I thought of it as, okay, it's more basketball. We get to watch this team after a layoff. It'll seem a little bit normal. Maybe they'll win some games. Bickley was a lot more bullish on the Suns in the bubble than I was. In fact, he may have even predicted they would go undefeated, which was amazing. But you can't – and the national reaction to it was, what is the NBA doing? The Suns? Really?
Right.
Why are they going as the 22nd team to get there? To their credit, and I think the seeds were planted back then. From a mentality standpoint, I know some of the pieces are different now, and they added a couple really valuable pieces. But from an organizational standpoint, that's where this, what we're seeing now, that's where that process started. I'm not breaking any news. Anybody who watched that team can kind of draw that same conclusion. But it's rare that you hear a team come out and say, we're going to make the most of this opportunity. And a year later, they're still making the most of that opportunity.
And that's the thing. Like, you knew that it was just such a small opportunity for them to really fully grasp on and take advantage of, and yet they did. And they put everything towards doing that, and they accomplished it. And what did that do? It gave them this overwhelming confidence that they can go in and continue to accomplish their goals. Now, they set loftier ones, obviously, now.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't even really know what their goals were at the beginning of the year. They made it clear to us that they were high expectations inside their own room whenever we'd get an opportunity to hear from them on Zoom calls. But it isn't like we're really in the back rooms getting a real feel for how their confidence level is to win it all. But here we are now evaluating their performance on a day-by-day basis through this playoff situation, through this postseason, which many of us forgot what it feels like. I am one of them who forgot what it feels like, because I've had a couple of kids in the meantime since the last time growing up in my house that don't know what it's like to be in a playoff situation with a basketball team and how long it can last and go on for weeks and weeks and feel like a crazy roller coaster. That's what we're in the middle of right now. So the reason why I'm bringing all this up is because I have a memory of my own, and I shared it with you briefly, Vince, but it was in 2010. I am a diehard San Francisco Giants fan. Hate me if you want. It's just real. And it is born in me because it was the first real access I had to professional sports as a kid. My dad would take me to doubleheaders as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old kid because he wanted to maximize the exposure. We're paying our good money. We're going to get two games out of it, baby. And we'd go to the doubleheaders at Candlestick Park and freeze our you-know-what's off, and the team was awful. I mean, just dreadful for the majority of my upbringing. So I grew up thinking there's no way they're ever winning it. It's just not going to happen. The Giants aren't going to win a World Series.
Yeah.
Yes, they did win one. They were in New York when it happened, okay? They never won one in the Bay. So now I'm thinking it's just not going to happen. In 2010, I cried when they won it. I also felt it all the way through and had this feeling in my mind, this is actually possible. And I'm so glad I did. From when they entered the playoffs run all the way through winning the World Series, I feel like you have to take advantage of it when you have it in front of you, Suns fans. And it's in front of us right now. And this team has as good of a chance as anybody left. Mm-hmm. It really is true that they have as good of a chance as anybody left. That's something that I'm okay dwelling in. But at the same time, we're going to break down the games. We're going to talk about all the other elements it. I just think it's not something to shy away from. And there is kind of part of you, if you're listening and you're a diehard fan, you have been your whole life, you're like, no, I can't let myself go there. Right? I don't want to be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Go there. I say go there.
I'm kind of in the middle right now. I was on our news station, KTAR News, yesterday morning, and Jamie West asked me the question, who would you rather face in the next round? And I said, you shouldn't ask that question.
And you didn't give an answer?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
And even if I'm able to shut that part of my brain off and just look at those two teams, I still don't have an answer.
That's a tough one.
Quite honestly. It's a very tough proposition.
Because one team you owned,
yes,
but yet has the raucous crowd and is playing the best basketball if the Suns aren't, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those two teams consistently.
Yes.
The Nets can be great, but yeah.
The Denver Nuggets still have a pulse. The Denver Nuggets last year came back from 2-3-1 deficits to win series. So again, if the Suns take care of business tonight, maybe I'll
Sunday,
be able to.
Sunday, we might talk a different.
Maybe we might be. Yeah. Coming up next, there's lots of questions that have followed Kyler Murray from his journey to college to the NFL. One of them still remains, and he talked about it yesterday, and we'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Marotta with John Blumen today on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta.
It is the human version of a train wreck. You can't look away.
I like this guy. They're a funny guy.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
I think all aspects of the game, leadership, taking care of the ball, being better as far as accuracy, just the whole game. I mean, there's no one in this building or that watches the game that's a bigger critic of themselves or of me than I am. So I know what I need to get better at. And when we get out there on the field, I plan to show that, I grew in those areas. So
it's Kyler Murray, the Arizona Cardinals, speaking at minicamp yesterday. They concluded minicamp, came out of it healthy, but I think a pretty promising kind of thesis statement there from Kyler Murray. I know what I need to improve upon. That's all good. There was something that came up in the media session yesterday that I don't know if you would describe it as alarming, interesting, persistent, whatever it is. And that is the baseball
question. No, not the two-sport thing again. Really?
The baseball question came up again. Here's Kyler Murray.
I know everybody around here probably, feels different about it. But, I mean, me personally, I play the game my whole life. Like, if I ever had the opportunity, for sure, I would definitely go for it. Like, that's – what are we talking about? And I'm sure anybody else asking me would, too. So, I don't know. I'm not trying to start anything. I'm just talking.
He's not trying to start anything, and you hear the playfulness in his voice when he talks about it. This is a guy that loves the sport of baseball, and the phrase I focus on in that soundbite is, if I ever got the opportunity to do it, I would go for it. Under the current circumstance with the Cardinals, Bloomer, he can't go for it because it's prohibited in his contract. Would the next contract have different verbiage in it? I find it hard to believe that the Cardinal stance would ever change, especially if they are so enamored with what Kyler Murray does this year, they're ready to sign that big fat quarterback check moving forward. I don't think their stance is going to change on it.
I guess it's just going to depend on who has the leverage, Vinny. I mean, it's going to be that classic confrontation and negotiation, as they say, or mediation, if you want to throw another Asian in there. It's going to boil down to if Kyler Murray is really that amazing as a quarterback, and he certainly trends in that direction. I love watching this young man play and love the fact that he's into the Planet Orange and the Suns, too, by the way. Let me throw that out there. So it's great seeing him in the gym. But if he continues playing at this high level, then when he gets in that negotiating room, he might have the leverage enough to say, look, if you really want me, I want this in the next contract. I want to be able to play baseball. If that is so important to him and he gets to a point where he really is bringing that leverage to the table, maybe it is in the next contract. I'm not going to put it past him, but I understand what your take is. If you're the Cardinals, you don't want that there. You don't want him leaving the football field and diverting his attention at all from being a quarterback in the NFL, which is one of the most demanding positions in all of sports. Is it fair to say that?
Yes. I could only imagine the reaction from fans. And I think there's a reason why those two sport athletes that we've seen cross over from baseball to football or basketball to baseball, they haven't been quarterbacks. There's a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL that grew up playing baseball and probably had the ability to play professional baseball. The leverage part that you bring up is where it gets really interesting for me. Because if Kyler Murray is the guy with the leverage in contract talks moving forward, it's because he has excelled.
Performed.
It's because the Cardinals feel comfortable in committing to him as their quarterback of the future, which they should right now. There's no reason why they shouldn't. But I think if Kyler Murray tries to use that leverage, hey, I'd like this language in here. If you know, I'd like to maybe explore this during the summer. I'm putting my foot down if I'm the Cardinals. There's no chance I'm letting my quarterback through that. Absolutely zero.
It would be fun to listen to the conversation. It wouldn't be Kyler doing it. It would be his agent
absolutely
obviously laying it down and saying, we need this verbiage
yes,
in
but
here.
You know where those sentiments are coming from ultimately.
Yes, I do. I don't blame either side. Look, you're at Kyler Murray's age and let's just say skill set. He probably feels like he could go out there and ball right now and help the Diamondbacks. Like, he probably feels like he could go get the job done at the major league level. But you and I both know that is harder than people think. You have called baseball games. A lot of people might not know this, but Vince Murata, a play-by-play guy in Major League Baseball, in fact, even had me fill in on some spring training games the Oakland A's back in the day.
Thanks for having my back, by the way.
Yeah, no, I was happy to be there, even though it was the team I grew up hating, or not as much as the Dodgers, but we just didn't care for the team across the bay like we did in the city. So I was thrilled. That was so much fun. But back to the whole idea of baseball, you understand this. There are levels of baseball for a reason, and not just two levels. Like, there are a lot of levels.
Well, they got rid of a couple of those levels, but there's still a lot
still
of levels.
A lot of levels.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know how good he is, but I know how talented of an athlete he is.
Hey,
I mean,
there's one man in the history of baseball and football drafts that's been picked in the first round of both. And that list consists of the name Kyler Murray. So he's pretty good.
Yeah, I know. And I know people used to swear about Dave Winfield back in the day and like every sport he ever picked up. You remember those stories?
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching Bo Jackson and watching Deion Sanders and to a certain extent DJ Dozier as well. I remember watching him and getting his cards on baseball and football cards and thinking that was awesome. He's got cards.
There's
in both
a name
sports.
I had forgotten about.
Yeah, just throw that out there.
Yeah.
Bring that. Not PJ Dozier. He's the one on the shelf for the Denver Nuggets. This is DJ Dozier. Google it.
My young crunk brothers.
Kyler Murray's also on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Not as a Cardinal athlete.
That's weird.
As a gamer.
It was fun. It was dope, you know, to be able to, you know, kind of do something as a kid, you know, looking at, you know, reading Sports Illustrated all the time, going to the gas station, the mall, you know, seeing Sports Illustrated everywhere. Your favorite athletes being on the cover and now being able to do it with guys that that I've watched on Twitch, guys that I've been able to build a relationship with and kind of do this football gaming deal or sports gaming deal. Man, it was a great experience, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
I got to say, the risk of me sounding old and out of touch and crotchety and grumpy and all those things is very high right now. I do realize things are changing. I'm fine with it. That's one thing I still just don't get is the whole gaming thing.
You know what? I've tried to embrace it because, as you know, I was even involved in it during the pandemic with calling 2K games on the radio, which I never would have imagined doing. But yeah, this is a next level thing because it's now Sports Illustrated. Right, and if you're putting it on the cover of Sports Illustrated,
yeah, it accelerates it becoming mainstream.
You're
certainly
trying to tell me it's a sport, is what you're trying to tell me.
I mean, it already is mainstream, but for the stragglers like me, that's another slap across the face. It's here, just deal with it.
Yeah, we're not the target demo, I think, is the
key. No.
Yeah, they're not looking at us.
And it's not like I didn't play video games.
I did all my life almost.
Yeah.
Still kind of do. I play my kids' Switch. I do. I play FIFA. I play NBA 2K.
Yeah.
And I'm awful. I used to be really good. And now, like, my kids don't be because they're not into it. But if I went and played like a kid right now, I'd get my butt kicked. Like the Nuggets got their butt kicked. I would.
Remember back in the day, though? I was a juggernaut on NHL 94.
I knew it was going to be that too. Yeah. That game,
Sega Genesis.
Yes, our age kids, you had to be somewhat respectable at that game to call yourself, you know, whatever we called ourselves back in the day. I don't even know. We weren't like Gen Xers, but
yeah.
I mean, that was the game.
Well,
NHL 93, 94, both of them.
And I think for guys in our age group, we always got grief. If you spent too much time playing video games when you were younger, you got grief from the parents.
Absolutely.
You're wasting your you can't. There's no chance you're going to get a scholarship to play video. Nobody's ever going to pay you to play video games. Get to work. And now that's a reality.
Play more video
maybe
games.
Maybe there's just this inherent anger about that.
Get back in the den and get the video game on. You're going to get to the pros.
I could have
little
been,
Johnny.
I could have been an NHL 94 pro.
Yeah.
Ninja, the gamer, the pro gamer, has a net worth of $25 million.
Okay.
Thank you.
You know what? I can get down with that more than I can get down with the YouTube influencer type people that are making money for just, what, brushing their hair on the camera?
Absolutely.
Like, at least it's skill when you're dominating people in Call of Duty and the other games that I don't even know.
But Ninja now we know the way YouTube stardom is the way to start a professional boxing career. I mean, it's all on its ear
stepping
right
stones.
Now.
It's like the minor leagues of baseball. Levels. It's all different levels.
Yeah, today I start my YouTube channel. 4 years from now, I'm fighting Canelo. That's the way it works. All right, coming up next, we get back into Suns, Nuggets, a little roundtable action. Bloomer and I will be joined by Kevin Zimmerman and Burnsy. Dave Burns next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.